This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, a conversation with guidebook author and travel expert Rick Steves. And focus on technology, a look at a local initiative that's giving life to technology startup companies in Cincinnati. But first, child abuse can take many forms. It can be physical, verbal, emotional, or it can be due to neglect. According to the Department of Health and Human Services, in 2012 nationally, more than 680,000 children were considered abused or neglected, and an estimated 1,640 kids died as a result. Here to discuss child abuse and prevention in Greater Cincinnati are Moira Ware, Director of Hamilton County Job and Family Services, and Dr. Robert Shapiro, Director of the Mayerson Center for Safe and Healthy Children Child Abuse Team at Cincinnati Children Hospital Medical Center. You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100. Email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Moira and Bob, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. Bob, that figure from the Department of Health and Human Services, 680,000 cases, sounds like it could be just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the number of child abuse cases. Just how prevalent is this really?
Mark, your analogy to the tip of the iceberg is a good one because, in fact, it's really difficult to know in real time whether a child is being a victim of abuse or neglect. But if we look at adults and we ask how often are adults reporting histories of abuse and neglect as children, the numbers are astronomical. In fact, a good study that I like to quote is one called the Adverse Childhood Experience Study, done about 15, 16 years ago. And of middle-class employed adults, for instance, 28% report that they were physically abused as a child, 21% report that they were sexually abused, and 11% report that they were emotionally abused. And so the numbers are staggering.
Yeah, they're very disturbing numbers as well, very troubling. Moira, what are the figures on child abuse locally?
Well, to give you a sense, I'm going to give you stats from 2013 because we haven't finalized our 2014 numbers, but we serve roughly 1 in 11 children in Hamilton County. That's 16,824 children a year. Of those children, on any given day, about 1,100 are actually coming into foster care because we can't keep those children safe within their home. So we're touching a lot of children in this community due to either abuse, neglect, or dependency.
Is there a certain age that's abused the most?
You know, actually, we touch children from 0 to 18. I would say that we find the children from 0 to 5 to be where we see the significant injuries. And also, those children are sometimes the most difficult to get to because if they're not in some form of school, you can't always have an intervention before something happens with a family.
Bob, you always hear the idea that those who are abused can grow up to be abusers themselves. Is that something that's true? What happens to children who are abused as they grow up?
So it's not true that if a child is abused, they're going to be an abusive parent. But however, many children who grow up in abusive households and experience other forms of adversity during their childhood years are going to have health, emotional, social interaction problems as adults. And one of those outcomes are going to be an inability to care for their children and provide a safe environment for them. So in that context, their children, there is an intergenerational transmission, and some of those children will also be abused.
513-419-7100 to join our conversation. Bob, tell me about the work the Mayerson Center does to help child abuse victims and what it does to try to reduce and prevent abuse.
Well, the Mayerson Center is a division at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. And in many ways, we're unique because we're actually a collaboration between doctors, nurses, social workers in the hospital, and caseworkers and staff from Moira's department, Job and Family Services. And we actually all work together. We share office space, and we work together to, one, identify children who are in unsafe environments and figure out how to promote and heal any injury or mental health problems that the child then has, and how the family can better take care of the child.
So there's a joint effort going on between your two organizations then.
Mm-hmm.
Moira, tell me about the efforts of the Department of Job and Family Services in dealing with child abuse.
Well, so we have a 241 Kids hotline that takes calls 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So we get roughly about 66,000 calls a year to that hotline. Those are people that are calling, whether they're professionals, doctors, police officers, teachers, or there could be a neighbor. They're calling up to say that they believe a child is at risk of being abused or neglected or is actually currently being abused or neglected. And our obligation is to then take that call, get that information, and determine whether or not we have enough information to actually open up a case, meaning to go out and do an investigation. We investigate roughly 5,800 calls. So of that 66, we end up opening up a case about 5,600 and actually do what's called a child welfare investigation. And we work in conjunction with the hospitals, the police departments, whomever, to figure out, you know, what's happened to this child, and then what level of intervention is needed to either keep that child safe in the home, or if we have to remove that child, but also if the child requires medical attention, behavioral health needs, and also determine what services the family needs to keep the child safe.
What's the ultimate goal? Are you ultimately striving for a situation where you can keep that family together?
Yes, we are driven by the federal laws and state statutes. Our goal is to keep families intact. We try to work with families and to keep families in whole, as long as the child's safety is to be paramount. And then how do we make sure the child can safely remain in the home? And it's oftentimes a multi-pronged approach, you know, meeting the needs of the child as well as working with the family members to remove any kind of barriers or obstacles that are contributing to their either not being able to keep the child safe, or if they're struggling with mental health, substance abuse, if there's domestic violence in the home, poverty can be a contributor. So we're trying to work with the family in that holistic setting.
Yeah. And Mark, one of the things that Marva and I both really want to do is catch this as early as possible so that the family and children don't have to come to the Mayerson Center, so that they don't need to have a social service placement made because a home is already unsafe for the child. And so if we can catch injuries early, if we can catch problems early, and most of all, if we can help promote families, increase families' capacity to raise that child in a healthy environment, then that's the real win for us.
Marva, what are the signs of child abuse?
And Bob's point's really good. I mean, if we could intervene before the child actually gets hurt, I mean, if you see a child that has unexplained injuries, I mean, if you have to look at the age of the child, does that injury look consistent with what the parent would say? Certainly, it's more difficult when children aren't verbal, but, if there's ways you can say, if you notice bruises, cuts, lacerations, things that aren't something that you would think of, that, and if the parent gives a story that's not consistent. Sometimes children actually become withdrawn, their behavior changes. If a child is fearful of a caretaker, their behavior may change when that caretaker comes in. And so that's a sign that if you're the parent and you're leaving your child with someone, you know, you want to pay attention to what they're saying. Children give cues about being uncomfortable in certain situations. This is a generalization, but if somebody is, has a substance abuse problem to the point where they can't remember things, and do they become violent? Is their patience compromised because of something the child's done? We actually find, and I think Bob could speak to this more than I can, that when children go through some developmental parts of their life, like potty training, can be very challenging for parents. And how does a parent respond so they then don't get frustrated? So as children develop, there's going to be normal things that happen. And how is the parent responding to that child? Does the parent have the skill set to know how to manage certain behaviors, and are their expectations consistent?
And Mark, one of the things that many people just believe and assume is that if we become parents, we know how to parent, and we know how to take care of the challenges that children present. And in fact, oftentimes that's just not true. And you asked earlier if an abusive child becomes an abusive parent. Part of becoming an abusive parent is when one doesn't know how to manage child behaviors and the challenges that child raising really require. So if a child grew up in a home where there was effective parenting, where they learn those lessons, and they're more likely to be able to manage the stresses involved in raising children. But one of the things that we may very well be able to implement here within Cincinnati is helping parents to become better parents, and how to anticipate problems and how to minimize their impact on household functions and stress.
Are there general characteristics that abusive adults might share?
Well, one of the things that increase the likelihood of a parent being abusive, if that parent has got substance problems, mental health, substance abuse problems, mental health issues, poverty is a big risk factor, along with unemployment and other stressors in life. If there's domestic violence in the home, that's an increased risk to the child of being abused.
Marva, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I think Bob covered most of them. I often think sometimes we all parent as we've been parented, so it's sometimes trying to get in and figure out what their parenting skills are and what their comfort level is. I often find it's really, do people have realistic expectations of child development and behavior, and what's my reaction to that child? And if you're going to administer some sort of discipline or consequences, does the child understand how the behavior is linked to what you're trying to teach them? So you don't want your parent, you don't want your children to fear you. You want them to learn from things. So, you know, how am I teaching my child to do things that aren't okay with me?
And Mark, one of the interesting distinctions is helping parents understand the difference between punishment and discipline. And the goal to raise a healthy child is not through punishment, but through effective discipline.
The case of NFL player Adrian Peterson, that and his son, that got a lot of national attention, and it raised the important question that you're bringing up, the difference between discipline and abuse. So how do you know when discipline has crossed that line into being abusive?
I mean, I could tell you how we would look at that. I mean, obviously, when you're going to administer discipline, you have to be in control of your you have to be in control. So if you're doing anything that's excessive, I mean, typically, if a child's left with a bruise, a cut, some kind of laceration, something's not probably gone as you would have planned. So it needs to be very controlled. I would say if you're going to do it, the parent needs to be control of their behavior, their own anger, that they're not being excessively angry, they're not using excessive force. But, you know, as an example, sometimes, you know, somebody has decided to discipline their child with a belt, as long as the belt doesn't leave any marks. But what sometimes has happened, a child might wiggle to get away, which is a normal response, and they get hit in the face with a belt buckle and they have an injury to their eye. That's excessive.
You know, disciplining, it's there's such a fine line there. Are there some things that parents should ask themselves and be considering when it comes to disciplining their children?
Well, if you can wait, don't choose the moment when you're really upset to administer a discipline, because it likely could turn into punishment at that time. And so parents should be thoughtful about the discipline that they use within their home. And there are lots of models where we can help parents figure out how to have a positive impact on their child and not a negative one. And something that we've learned over the years is that violence in the home is not easily distinguished by a child, one type of violence from another. And so if the discipline includes violence, we know that it has a negative impact on the child. And that's something that is taught to parents. And how, as a community, if we provide additional help for parents to get through parenting, I think we can change.
We'll continue our conversation about child abuse, spotting and preventing it after the break. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. My guests this afternoon are Moira Ware, Director of Hamilton County Job and Family Services, and Dr. Robert Shapiro, Director of the Mayerson Center for Safe and Healthy Children Child Abuse Team at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Bob, people often think of child abuse as a physical thing, but it really takes a lot of different forms, doesn't it?
Well, it definitely does. And in fact, although they all have the word abuse in them, physical abuse, sexual abuse, and emotional abuse are often quite different.
What are some things people can do to help prevent this, to help reduce it?
Well, we always say if you're a family member, friend, or anybody that knows a family that might be in a situation where they are feeling overwhelmed and stressed, or they see some of the things we've talked about, some untreated mental health or substance abuse or violence, to call 241 Kids and report that, and maybe we can help do an intervention before something happens to the child. I think the community, you know, people are out in the community, they see things, so it's always educating the community about what is abuse and neglect. We actually did a segment a while ago about Do Ask, Do Tell, and that's really just raising awareness, asking people to call, and it's better to call than not to call, so don't put yourself in that position. Also, as parents, know who's around your children. If you're having a caretaker come in, know who that person is. Do you know their history? Do you know how they're going to behave with your children? Do they have the realistic expectations of your child too? Because sometimes, you know, parents leave their children with people that they think are actually going to, provide good care, and they find out that they weren't. And so it's knowing who's in and out of your home, knowing who your children are interacting with when they go to someone's home, who are they involved with, who's in that household.
As a parent, recognize that if there is violence in your home, it does affect your children. And so if there's domestic violence, if you're involved in a relationship where a partner is being violent, that actually is harmful to your child, and seek help. If you're a neighbor and you know there's violence going on in a home or in a family that you have contact with, call 241 Kids and let them know what's happening. As a community, let's be responsible for our children. And as a parent, if you're having difficulty with child behaviors and if you're not quite sure how to extinguish a behavior that needs to change, you can ask your pediatrician for some help. And we have some really evidence-based interventions that can help you as a parent work with a child who's got some challenging behaviors.
Mara, is it tough to get people involved, though, because there's a reluctance? Maybe they might feel like they're being nosy or overstepping their bounds if they do that, what we're talking about here.
Certainly, people always feel like they don't want to get involved or they don't want to pass judgment. But, I mean, one thing is when you make a phone call, it's confidential, so we can never reveal the reporting source. So it's a confidential information. That's not to say that somebody might try to figure out who called, but we can never reveal that. Another thing that we try to tell parents when you're thinking about if you're feeling overwhelmed, I mean, first of all, when you've had an exchange with your child, how did you feel about that? Did you feel like they understood what your exchange was? Do they feel like you've imparted the lesson that you hope to have? Do they know that you love them despite this interaction, if you've tried to do some discipline? And it really goes back to how did you as a parent feel good, and do you think your child understood that? And if you're starting to answer those questions where you're like, oh, that didn't feel right, I didn't impart what I wanted to, the child may not know that I love them. That's when you maybe want to go ask for help. Maybe I'm not responding to my child appropriately. How can I change this so that it doesn't escalate next time?
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's talk with Christopher in Lebanon. Good afternoon, Christopher. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Well, hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Good. What's your question?
Well, I wanted to ask both Moira and Robert, my question was, would you categorize truancy, maybe on the part of the parent, sort of a forced truancy, would you consider that a form of neglect and child abuse?
Well, what do you mean exactly by forced truancy?
Well, I mean, so it's not necessarily the child is being taken to school and then skipping or disappearing, but the parents never go forth with getting the child enrolled. They don't take the child to school. There's not like a bus option, or the child can't walk to school necessarily. So the child is essentially being forced to stay home and not go to school and learn and be socialized and things like that.
Yes, we do get calls about those kind of situations when a child isn't attending school regular or isn't enrolled, and we certainly would then become involved to try to figure out what is the barrier to getting the child appropriately educated and actively engaged in an education setting.
Okay. Do you find that you get a lot of those reports?
I would not say no. We do not get a lot, but we do get those reports. Unfortunately, I don't have numbers in front of me right now what those are, but we do certainly get those calls, and we certainly do investigate those calls.
Christopher, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Bob, something that seems to be a little understood part of child abuse is a relatively new term, sentinel injuries. Now, what are those?
Well, the concept of a sentinel injury is a marker, if you will, is a sign that a child is in a dangerous environment and has had some maltreatment. And the Ohio Attorney General has just funded a study that will be conducted statewide by all the children's hospitals in Ohio to try to identify if, in fact, we can identify earlier children who are abused and at risk for further abuse by noticing injuries that they have or other signs of maltreatment. And we don't have the answer to this, although there have been some preliminary studies to suggest that nearly 30% of those children who ultimately end up being victims of physical abuse were seen by a hospital or a doctor with a sign that indicated abuse might be the cause.
So is it fair to say the focus of the study will be on sentinel injuries and how that early detection can help prevent and reduce child abuse?
Yes, we're going to look throughout Ohio to see if there are opportunities for us to recognize a child who's a physical abuse victim earlier than we do now.
Moira, how valuable would that be from your perspective to be able to see this so much earlier than we do now?
Very valuable. I mean, oftentimes we'll find that we've had contact with the family before at some point, and had we been able to pick up maybe some of those earlier injuries that were not really explainable, but we didn't really have medical documentation to help support if there was an inconsistency. So this will be extremely helpful for us as we approach cases going forward.
What are some other things that people can do to help cut this down, Bob?
Well, I think that oftentimes it does start with the family. And so it's increasing our capacity as parents and the entire family unit to raise children in a healthy and safe environment. And so one, that means taking care of ourselves. So if we're depressed, that affects children and increases the likelihood of abuse. And so let's recognize our own needs for mental health intervention and seek those out. It means reducing the amount of violence in the home. It means providing an environment where children can recognize their own strengths and be encouraged to develop with what we term resiliency. And all of these things help to promote environments that are safe, strong, and nurturing.
Moira, any advice from your side?
No, obviously, as a friend, neighbor, family member, if you see somebody struggling, offer to help. Isolation can really cause people to feel, more depressed. So if people are also living in cramped quarters, we're finding more and more of our families have lost their homes and they're living with other family members, which adds stress. So just if you can offer your support or help to somebody to help relieve their stress level, and if they're not taking it, and if you feel like it's serious enough, make the phone calls to get the people involved that can come in and help before the child actually gets injured.
Obviously, both of your organizations offer a lot of resources to the community for dealing with this. What are some other resources in the community that people can turn to?
A lot of people turn to their churches. The faith-based community is very involved in helping to do interventions. There's a lot of social services organizations throughout our community. One thing we're very lucky in Hamilton County, particularly, we have a lot of providers that are willing to help. If you don't feel comfortable, going to one of our organizations. I do think that, the United Way 211, if you called, I know they would be willing to help out if you make those phone calls, refer people to other services.
And Mark, I would encourage your listeners to have a conversation with their child's doctor and with their doctor, and that these are conversations that don't necessarily get mentioned all the time during a well child visit, but these are really important for healthy child development, and so include your child's doctor and your doctor.
The numbers are so grim, Bob. Are we seeing inroads, or are things improving at all on this?
It turns out, Mark, that to really measure the prevalence of child abuse and compare year-to-year figures is difficult. We do think that there's less sexual abuse than there used to be, and we think our efforts to identify children who are victims of sexual abuse is paying off, and that's great. I don't think that we're seeing a reduction in physical abuse, and with our increased numbers of the number of families and children living in poverty, we don't actually expect the numbers to change, and we really need to direct our efforts to reduce that.
Moira and Robert, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. Moira Ware, Director of Hamilton County Job and Family Services, and Dr. Robert Shapiro, Director of the Mayerson Center for Safe and Healthy Children Child Abuse Team at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center.